We'll continue the arguments in the Securities and Exchange Commission against Sloan. Mr. Sloan, you may continue whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, I wish to bring the attention of the Court to a small factual matter which came to my attention yesterday. You mentioned 36 trading suspension orders, and the source of this is because on page 122 of the appendix, there is a list of orders, and there was a typographical error in that the SEC, when they copied my original petition, left out the December 25th, 1975 order.
The question I put, Mr. Sloan, was a purely hypothetical one, right, asking whether if 36 consecutive 10-day orders were entered.
Yes, but I did discover that there are 36 listed here, and in fact there were 37 because there is a typographical error in their appendix.
Well, my hypothetical was deliberately made one less in order to make it a hypothetical.
For whatever reason, I did notice that. And in the original record, I do have the December 25th date in my petition, which I filed in the Court of Appeals, which has been transmitted to this Court. However, on the subject of the record, I also wish to bring to the attention of this Court the fact that the SEC has refused to permit the record as it was in the state it was before the Court of Appeals to be transmitted to this Court. I mentioned this in my brief, and it's a matter which is pending before the Court of Appeals because I filed a motion in the Court of Appeals to require the SEC to certify the full record to the Court of Appeals, and that matter is now pending. I have also explained what happened in some detail in a letter which I wrote to the clerk of this Court, but he has advised me that he will not distribute it at this late date. What essentially happened was that after the Court of Appeals made its decision, the Court of Appeals sent the record back to the SEC, which is its normal practice. When this Court granted certiorari, the SEC was directed or requested to send the record back to the Court of Appeals so it could be transmitted to this Court. But what it did was it switched the record so that the record that was sent back to the Court of Appeals was not the record which the Court of Appeals had returned to the SEC, and the Court of Appeals was not appraised of this fact. So that the record which this Court has consists of memorandums dealing with trading suspension orders. I have no objection to this Court reading these memorandums, but the fact remains that they were not filed in the Court of Appeals. All that was filed in the Court of Appeals was a certified list. The record which has not been transmitted to this Court concerns the record of the administrative proceedings against me, which was in a part of the record in the consolidated case when these two cases were before the Court of Appeals. The SEC says that that record is not pertinent to the issues involved in this appeal, and therefore they will not transmit that record to the Court of Appeals for certification to this Court, even though they have been requested by the clerk of the Court of Appeals to do so. So right now we have a situation because I happen to feel that that record is pertinent to the question of mootness which the SEC has raised, particularly with regard to certain points which were discussed yesterday.
I thought the Court raised the question of mootness.
Well, the SEC has always said that this case was moot right from the very beginning.
But didn't the Court ask the parties to brief the question of mootness?
Oh, yes, they did, but the SEC was briefing the question of mootness already. Now, this goes to the case of Weinstein versus Bradford, for example, which was discussed yesterday. It is true that the trading suspension orders have expired. However, at the present time, there is an order currently outstanding which is a lifetime bar against me from being associated with a securities dealer. I believe that I can show through the record, which the SEC has refused to transmit, that this lifetime bar was based in part on successive trading suspension orders, which the Court of Appeals declared to be illegal.
Was that order before the Court of Appeals?
Yes, it was, because there were two cases before the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals consolidated both cases. The record is combined.
Why is it that the Court of Appeals didn't mention
it? It didn't mention what?
The order you're talking about.
Oh, it was part of the same decision. The decision in the Court of Appeals discussed two different cases, but they were consolidated. This Court, when it granted certiorari, only agreed to review the issues pertaining to one of the cases, But nevertheless, I claim that the record of both cases, since it was a consolidated case, should be here. And I should be allowed to cite documents in the record of the other case, which I think demonstrate that this case is not moot in my presentation.
Is your contention, then, Mr. Sloan, that the SEC relied on a number of factors in issuing its lifetime bar order against you, and one of them was this 10-day order, and therefore it is at least conceivable that if this 10-day order were found to be invalid, they might not have entered the same lifetime bar order against you?
Yes, what my contention is precisely is that the SEC, when they issued successive 10-day suspension orders, deducted from my net capital certain securities which were in failed to deliver. Then they found me retroactively in violation of the net capital rule, and on the basis of these findings that I was in violation of the net capital rule, they then barred me from the securities business. If these 10-day suspension orders were illegal in the first place, I would say that they cannot rely on them to make net capital deductions, and therefore the order which barred me for life from the securities business is invalid.
What's the tie-in between the 10-day suspension and the net capital deduction?
Yes, because the SEC has a release, Securities Exchange Act Release 10209, which states that if a broker is short a security which is suspended from trading by the SEC, he is required to deduct from his net capital the fails to deliver in suspended securities. And I, in fact, was short at the time that they entered successive suspension orders on a number of occasions, and they deducted the fails to deliver in suspended securities. Therefore, it seems to me reasonable that if those orders were illegal, they cannot rely on them to bar me from the securities business. I haven't reached that point in this case. I don't know if this court affirms the decision. It may be that there'll be further proceedings, and I'll lose on that particular point. But it seems to me that I have the right to make this showing that they did, in fact, rely on successive trading suspension orders to bar me from the securities business.
As an argument against mootness.
As an argument against mootness. That's precisely the point, because I'm here arguing the question of mootness.
What's the present status of the bar against your – is that involved in some litigation?
No, there's no proceedings at all. The SEC claims that the commission.
I mean, have you attacked anywhere this bar against your engaging in the security business?
Well, it was part of the decision against the Court of Appeals. I have not instituted any further proceedings for the reason that the SEC staff claims that as long as the case is pending in the courts, the SEC itself has no jurisdiction to review the matter because the Court of Appeals acquired exclusive jurisdiction with the filing of the record. I disagree with that contention, but as long as they're going to make it.
Well, does a challenge to the validity of that order, whether or not there shall be one, will it or will not turn on the result of this case?
It may turn on the result of this case. I feel that.
And that's why you suggest there's no mootness.
That's right.
Well, why isn't the issue of that order a closed matter? You haven't brought that case here.
Well, I did bring that case here, but you denied certiorari on that case.
So it's over.
It's over, but nevertheless, if this court finds that the SEC acted illegally in issuing successive trading suspension orders,
I think
I can go back to the Securities Exchange Commission in the first instance and reopen it. That would be the place I would go to with that particular claim. And that is why I feel it is critical to have the record here so that the judges of this court can look at the record and see that, in fact, they did deduct from my net capital certain sums of money based on successive trading suspension orders. Now, I will point out that because of the continuing policy of the SEC, this case has been going on for a long time. The specific orders which the Court of Appeals vacated were not themselves used by the SEC as a basis, because by the time this case got in the court, this is the third suit I brought, by the time this case got before the Court of Appeals, it was too late to challenge those suspension orders because there's a 60-day limitation in Section 25A of the Securities Exchange Act. Nevertheless, the decision of the Court of Appeals makes it clear, and I believe that you will affirm that decision, that if you will affirm that decision, it will be clear that all of these orders were illegal, that they have been issuing over the past 33 years. And this would give me a basis for going back to the Securities and Exchange Commission and asking them to reopen the proceedings.
It would also destroy our denial of cert in the other one?
No, this is a new proceeding. If I go back to the commission and say that and start a whole new proceeding.
But you do understand that that other case is not before us.
I understand that you did not grant certiorari on those issues.
Do you understand that the other case is not before us?
No, I do not, Your Honor, because...
Well, let me tell you it is not. Will that help you?
Well, but
could you argue on that assumption that I might possibly be right?
Well, I'm willing to agree that you might possibly be right, but I'm not willing to concede that.
Do that for a minute now and argue with what we have got.
Yes.
We have got the opinion of the Court of Appeals.
Yes, but you do
Judge
have...
Judge Anderson's opinion. That's all we have.
You do have the case before you. Even though my petition was denied and their petition in the same case was granted, I don't think the court's jurisdiction is limited. I don't expect the court to decide anything about that case. But I don't think the court's jurisdiction is limited to these two specific points the SEC has raised.
Well, you won't assume that I might be right.
Oh, no, I will assume that you might be right. I said I don't expect this court to do anything with regard to that matter. I just say that on the issue of mootness, which I am briefing and arguing, that that I can demonstrate that the case is not moot through the record. I don't know what's going to happen if the Court of Appeals grants my motion, the SEC transmits the record to the Court of Appeals, and it arrives here a month from now or so. It seems to me that this is a very undesirable situation to be in.
So may I suggest that your time's running?
Yes. Okay.
And,
now,
I might get on to the merits.
Right. Now, in the yesterday, the SEC gave three reasons for the trading suspension, and they said that that this suspension was of this length because there were three different things going on, and this is the reason why they had to let it go for so long. And one was market manipulation, two was a change in management, three was a late 10-K filing. I want to address the facts which are in the record with regard to these three matters. The change in management took place at a meeting of the Board of Directors of Canadian Javan Limited on March 6, 1976. At that time, a group headed by William Wismer threw out the Doyle Group, threw out the management of Canadian Javan Limited, fired Mr. Doyle personally. This is reflected in the March 26th memo, which is on page 104-105 of the appendix. The 10-K delinquency, which is another reason cited by the SEC, occurred on March 31st, 1976, and this can be seen from page 110 of the appendix. So prior to March 6th, there were 32 suspension orders. Prior to March 31st, there were 34 suspension orders. This means that the SEC suspended trading for 31 times because of the market manipulation, for two more times because of the change in management, and for another three times because of the lateness in the 10-K filing. The SEC also referred to a fugitive from justice yesterday in the argument that they presented. However, on March 6, 1976, Mr. Doyle, who is a fugitive, notorious fugitive from justice, who they are referring to, was thrown out of the company. He was fired personally. And the SEC claims that they suspended trading for that reason. On July 30th, 1976, after the suspension was lifted, there was a court-ordered special meeting of directors, special meeting of stockholders, which I attended in Montreal, which is also discussed in the record because a copy of the judge's order is here, holding a special election. And at that point, Doyle got back into management and threw the Wismer Group out. So now we have a situation where an individual, a Toronto attorney, became the president of Canadian Javan Limited. At that point, the SEC says it suspend trading. 3 months later, when the fugitive from justice gets back in control of the company, they do not suspend trading. And I point this out because I think this demonstrates that really the reason is a fiction. In addition to that, Mr. Justice Powell yesterday raised the question of whether a corporation has the right to protest, to come in and ask for a hearing, protest a trading suspension. Ironically, it's reported in the Wall Street Journal that at the time of the May 2nd, 1976 lifting of the trading suspension, management of Canadian Javan Limited petitioned the SEC to continue the trading suspension. And incidentally, also, the earlier trading suspension, which was terminated in January of 1975, the management of Canadian Javan again requested, a different management, requested that the SEC continue the trading suspension and filed a motion and obtained a stay in the district court. This illustrates a point that very often the corporation itself does not wants a trading suspension even though it's to the detriment of its own stockholders, because the corporate management, for their own personal reasons, may desire that trading not take place. Now, in the matter of the 10-K, this 10-K report became delinquent on March 31st, 1976, as the record states. I have not known of any case. The SEC often suspends trading because of a 10-K delinquency, but they don't suspend on the day that the 10-K became delinquent, and they don't suspend even 2 months later because the trading suspension here was lifted on May 2nd.
Well, Mr. Do you challenge, I take it you challenge, Sloan, the right of the SEC to issue more than one suspension?
Yes, that's correct. That's
And why do you?
Well, because they did say yesterday that these were the reasons that they suspended trading, and I want to show that there was no rational basis for this. What they have done is make.
But what if there had been? What if there had been? I thought your view was that without a hearing or without some further proceedings, they just couldn't grant more than one 10-day suspension.
Yes, I do feel that way. That is a point which I thought might be raised when I went into the discussion of this. But
well, that is what the Court of Appeals held, isn't it?
Yes, that is what the Court of Appeals held. I just wanted to show that there isn't any rational basis.
Do you concede there, don't you, that there are circumstances under which it could issue more than one 10-day consecutive suspension?
No, I do not make that concession. I realize the amicus does make that concession. I do not, because I do not believe that the SEC can be allowed, particularly when they do not issue reasons for the trading suspensions. Therefore, when they say that we're issuing a new suspension because we have a new reason for the suspension, and they haven't said that in this case, but if they said that, that something completely new and different has arisen, what happened is...
Well, what if it was the same old thing?
Well, I think if it was the same old thing, it clearly would be prohibited by the statute. I'm saying even if it was for a different reason, it would also be prohibited. When Congress originally passed the provision in 1934, there was Section 19A. It had four provisions: 1A, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Sections 19A, 1, 2, and 3 all required the SEC to give notice and the opportunity for a hearing. Only Section 19A4. Allowed the SEC to act summarily without notice and the opportunity for hearing. And both the House and Senate report stated in 1934 that they did not require the SEC to give notice and the opportunity for hearing because this was a summary power to be exercised in emergency situations.
Well, is this an argument that the statute authorizes only one single 10-day suspension?
That's correct.
And if they want another one, they have to give notice and hearing.
Well, that would be under what's now Section 12J. They could ask
all their authority under 4 is exhausted once they've made one suspension. That's
right. There have been some instances this year in which the SEC on three separate occasions, but not successive, has suspended trading in Penn Central Transportation Company and a number of subsidiaries.
Now, Mr. Sloan, do you concede that the SEC would have power under 12K to issue a 10-day suspension of trading, let's say, in January?
Right.
And then again to issue a 10-day suspension of trading under 10-K in March?
Yes, I would agree that as the statute is written,
it does permit that.
Yes.
Could it not issue a 10-day suspension of trading on January 2nd, and then that takes you to January 12th, and then on the morning of January 13th, issue a 10-day suspension of trading?
No, I do not believe that this is permitted.
Why not? What's the difference between January and March and January 10th and January 12th and January 13th?
Well, I think that this goes really to a matter of the intent of Congress. Congress did not intend that the SEC, particularly since it never issues reasons for a strange suspension, we don't know if it has a new reason or a different reason.
Well, your point is, though, with good reasons or bad,
yes,
with or without reasons, no matter how great the reason or how great the public interest, that 12K, as a matter of the power of the commission,
right,
simply does not empower the commission to issue a suspension of trading for longer than a 10-day period.
That's correct.
That's your basic position, as I understand.
That's right.
It. Am I right?
Yes, sir. Yes,
what about the 1975 amendment, one-year amendment?
Section 12J, which you are referring to, is actually a renumbering because it was formerly called Section 19A2. They moved it over to Section 12J. The Commission has had the power since 1934 to suspend the registration of a security. Now, when they enacted 12J, they included a sentence which in addition to renumbering, they include a sentence which said that it would be illegal for a broker or dealer to buy or sell or use a means or instrumentalities of interstate commerce to effect a transaction in a security whose registration has been suspended or revoked. So that this makes it clear, although it was clear already, that the SEC could, after notice and a hearing, suspend the registration, which would also suspend the trading in the security under Section 12J. But they've always had this power since 1934.
For up to one year.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, I'd like to mention that in this case...
That's not involved in it.
No.
Well, they haven't exercised that power under Section 12J. They haven't provided notice in the hearing. I would like to point out that in this particular case, the SEC suspended trading for 370 days, which is more than 1 year. Therefore, they actually suspended trading for more time under Section 12K without notice and the opportunity for a hearing than they were permitted to suspend with notice and the opportunity for a hearing under Section 12J. So what they're saying is that they can suspend trading for a longer period of time without notice than they can with notice, and I'm sure that this could not possibly be what Congress intended. Now, also yesterday, Mr. Justice Powell asked whether the rollover proceedings are ex parte, and of course the Commission says that this is not a rubber stamp proceeding. The Commission very seriously considers the needs of investors and this kind of thing. But again, although I don't want to run into the same trap that I may have fallen into just a second ago, I think that the record demonstrates that the Commission, not only is it a rubber stamp proceeding, but the Commission itself plays no part in the decision to suspend. In this record of this case, the first trading suspension is dated April 29th, 1975. The memorandum, which they have submitted as the record of this trading suspension, is a memorandum by the staff dated May 2nd, 1975, 3 days later. So that it is clear, this is not a memorandum from the Commission. This is a memorandum from the staff, and it explains the reasons for the trading suspension. From this, it is clear that the commissioners themselves could not have received this memorandum at the time trading was suspended. And in fact, since the suspension orders are not signed by the commissioners, they don't bear the commissioners' names, and we don't even know if the commissioners knew. The commissioners may have been on vacation someplace. We don't even know that they were in Washington at the time. They therefore did not participate, and perhaps they were read in newspapers that trading had been suspended in Canadian Javelin Limited. But this is really about all. It is quite clear that the secretary of the commission is performing a ministerial task, apparently at the direction of members of the staff, and the commissioners themselves are not involved.
Mr. Sloan, let me ask you, what is your view of what the Commission's duty was 10 days after the first order was entered if they were persuaded there was market manipulation going on but they didn't have real solid proof of it? What do you say they should have done?
The market manipulation in this instance ended on February 12, 1975. I have the indictment. This is the information that was filed in Canada by the Canadian authorities, and the last wash trade that took place, which is alleged here, there are 406 counts of wash trading. The last one took place on February 12, 1975. And all of the trades alleged here occurred on the Montreal or Vancouver stock exchanges. Now, in a hypothetical situation, what if there is a market manipulation? I would say that a trading suspension order, which halts trading for 10 days, is sufficient to bring to an end any market manipulation. Because usually market manipulators, they rely on certain things to keep the price up. They park securities. I was a broker-dealer for 5 years, and I somehow have some idea of what they do when they manipulate a stock. And when a trading suspension comes along, they suspend trading for 10 days. That brings to an end any market manipulation. When the stock opens for trading again, any stock in margin accounts almost very often is sold. The people who they've got the stock locked in with almost always have to get out. There's investigations involved. The stock comes down and the manipulation is over in practice. And I think that it could be assumed that this would happen even in theory. And I think that this is what Congress had in mind. They said this was an emergency power. They didn't say that this was something the Commission could do for more than a year. as in this case, or for 13 years, as in the Continental Vending Machine case.
You don't suggest, then, that there should be some other legal proceeding or some other legal remedy that was available at the end of the 10 days to perpetuate the suspension?
The SEC already has a number of remedies. They have administrative remedies. They have injunctive remedies. If there is some remedy, in addition to that, the appropriate relief is for them to apply to Congress for this remedy. Congress has given them Section 12J, and it's stated in the Senate Report 9475 that this was intended to be exercised in when they wanted to suspend trading for a period of extended duration. Now they say this is insufficient because many companies are not registered because they don't have as much as $1 million in assets and 500 stockholders, which is required by Section 12G of the Securities Exchange Act. So they say many securities are not registered. Therefore, what's going to happen in a case of a security which is not registered? How are we going to stop trading in that? And I think the answer is that Congress simply didn't intend that they should be allowed to do this, because you must remember that there are many corporations which are technically which are traded, which are very small, and which the public interest is simply not sufficient for the SEC to get involved.
Your answer is that's Justice Stevens, is it under the statute, there just isn't any remedy provided to suspend trading in a security for more than 10 days,
even with a hearing. Suspend trading.
Even with a hearing.
No, we're talking about securities which are not registered.
Yes,
which
exactly.
are not registered. Now, Canadian Javelin is registered,
well,
so it doesn't apply to this case.
Yeah, but that's true about non-registered ones.
Right. There are companies which are small corporations. They have less than a million.
How about answering Brother Stevens' question, then? What should the SEC have done here with respect to a registered security? Started a new proceeding?
Well, with respect to a registered security, they can start a proceeding under 12J. With respect to a non-registered
security. After notice and hearing.
Yes, after notice and
hearing. So at the end of 10 days, they should have gone under 12.
Right. That's what they should have done in this case. But by the way, in this case, there was no issue or misconduct, at least according to the indictment and according to the SEC's complaint against a Canadian, because the SEC filed a complaint in the Southern District of New York, but the defendants were Doyle and his cohorts. The Canadian Javelin Limited was not named as a defendant. Similarly, in the information filed in Canada, Canadian Javelin Limited was not a defendant, so there was no issue or misconduct. Therefore, Section 12J could not have been invoked. They make a big point of this, but I think the remedy is to go to Congress and ask for extended powers, if that's what they need. Thank you very much.
Your time has expired, Mr. Sloan.
What?
Mr. Pitt, your time has expired. Mr. Pitt, you have 3 minutes left.
Thank you. The only brief points I wish to make are that, as Mr. Sloan concedes at the end of his submission, 12J was inapplicable in this circumstance because the market manipulation which went on was not engaged in by the company, and therefore issuer misconduct was not involved, and 12J was inapplicable. That would have meant that there was no remedy whatsoever. In addition, the manipulation that we charged was charged to have begun in the beginning of 1975 and continued right up to the date of the complaint. It did not stop in February 1975, according to the charges in our allegation. The
Mr.
last
Pitt,
point.
Is Mr. Sloan correct in telling us that the change of management in the late 10K filings occurred in March of 76, so they really couldn't have justified the first 25 or 30 suspension order?
We learned about it late about that time.
Your principal period of suspension, I don't know,
was the manipulation.
Was the manipulation.
That is correct.
Is he also correct that there was an order entered on Christmas that just didn't get into the record?
Apparently so.
And I take it was given great deliberation on that day.
There was. There was deliberation with respect to each of these suspension orders, as I indicated yesterday.
On whose part?
By the commission itself.
All the commissioners were in only, their offices on Christmas
yes.
Day, were
they? Yes.
All the members of the
I don't recall the precise date. I'd have to look that up. I don't recall the precise date of the order. But what happens is that each of the commissioners must approve a trading suspension order. It cannot be done by any other official.
Is that done in writing?
Pardon?
Is that done in writing?
There is a minute of the commission entered. That is correct.
Well, where and, is that?
There is an official commission minute record book that is kept in the agency.
Would that have been for December 25, too?
I don't know if that was – I must – I must confess I do not know if that was the precise date that that trading suspension order was entered. What would have happened is that the order might have been entered on the 25th formally, but the decision to enter that order would have been taken 3 or 4 days prior to that.
I just want to be sure of this. You're telling us that the full commission, every member, acts on a suspension order and personally signs something. Is that
A quorum of the commission.
A quorum of the commission.
A minimum of 3 of the 5 members. If some members are sick or are out of town, they might not participate. But a minimum of 3 commissioners must participate, and their votes are recorded in an official minute. If a matter is taken around seriatim, as sometimes.
What do they have before them when they act?
They have a staff memorandum and the advice of their legal assistants. Each commissioner has a separate legal assistant.
Do the minutes show the reasons for the rollover of the suspension?
Sometimes they might. In many cases, they would reflect.
Does the record contain a typical minute?
This record does not contain a typical minute.
Nor any, does it?
No.
Does it contain any minute?
Well, are the supporting papers in the file somewhere?
Yes.
So what was presented to the commission?
Yes. Those are in the record. The staff recommendations and the information that was given given to the commission are in the record.
Why not the commission's minute then, if all the rest of it's here?
I simply don't know why that was not put in the record below.
But you said you did see the minute that said on Christmas Day the commission met.
No, Your Honor. The commission did not meet on Christmas Day. The period of the trading suspension commenced on Christmas Day. The staff recommendation would have come up 3 or 4 days earlier, at which point the commission would have met. The commission probably took that action on December 21st or 22nd to commence on December 25th. The commission itself would not meet on Christmas Day.
Do the minutes record any findings?
The minutes indicate that the staff has made certain matters known to it in general, and that the commission has taken action because the public interest and the protection of investors requires.
Are those minutes available to Mr. Sloan when he complains about what the SEC has done?
I'm simply unaware whether he requested them in this case or whether they were made available.
What is the policy?
The policy of the commission is often to make its minutes available in court litigation where they are requested and under the Freedom of Information Act where they are requested.
Quite apart from court litigation, normally you can see a court order without having a litigation. Is that the policy of the commission?
The commission's minutes are made available under the Freedom of Information Act unless they contain certain matters that might be exempt, and they are.
That implies that they're not made available to Mr. Sloan.
I think
unless he proceeds under the Freedom of Information Act.
If Mr. Sloan makes a request to the commission to see commission minutes and there is no exempt material in there, he would see the commission's minutes.
Did he get some of these memos that are in the record?
He
got
yes,
them
he did.
By subpoena process or simple request?
He did get. I think he requested them, and we made them available as part of the record, and he had them.
Are you representing to us that had he requested the minutes, he would have got the minutes?
I would have to know what was in the minutes, the precise minutes of these particular actions, to say whether there might have been excisions, but I think he would have gotten the minutes, yes.
Well, Mr. Pitt, could I suppose you think there's manipulation in an unregistered security and you want to suspend trading, and you look at the statute, it says 10 days. Now, you suspend, and you continue to suspend. What is that pending? What other remedy? You can't go on forever as long as you think there's manipulation.
That is correct.
What is it pending? What are you trying to find? You're investigating. You have probable cause, you think, to believe what?
To believe that we can go into court, either get a preliminary injunction.
Under
or
what section of the statute?
Under Section 21 of the Securities Exchange
Act. So there is a remedy that you can have.
To stop the manipulation.
Yes. So there is a remedy. You're not without remedy.
We are not the remedy we lack, if Mr. Sloan's interpretation of the 10-day suspension power is correct, is from the time we learn that there might be a manipulation to the time that we conclude there is one and can go to court to stop it. Under Mr. Sloan's theory, we would be compelled to allow the manipulation to take place.
So that you can do it on your own until you can convince a judge to give you a preliminary injunction.
Until we can find out who did it. And convince a judge to
so without to evidence, you can do it ex parte, but you have to. But you really can't.
No, as I indicated yesterday, I think that we could
well,
have
it
used
is ex parte. You didn't give Mr. Sloan notice of it.
Mr. Sloan availed himself of a procedure that is published in the Code of Federal Regulations to apprise
that,
the Commission of Information.
That doesn't keep it from being ex parte, does it?
No, it does not.
Mr. Pitt, isn't it the general rule that when a lawyer gets a temporary injunction or restraining order, he's the hardest man to find once he gets it?
I've had that experience.
I won't be fair to you. If you admit that's true, why wouldn't that be true once you get a 10-day one that you can renew forever? Why wouldn't you be absent? Oh.
First, we do not suggest that we can renew the suspension forever, and I wish to stress that point.
Only 370 days.
In this particular case, and although the court did not find an abuse...
That's 13 years that Mr. Sloan mentioned.
The one that went on for 13 years was a bankruptcy proceeding, and in
was
which
was this a series of 10-day suspensions?
There was a series of
13 years.
There was a series of 10-day suspensions. In that case, we had specific requests from court-appointed officers to suspend the trading, and the commission obliged the trustee in bankruptcy while a reorganization proceeding was effected. Our present policy would not be to repeat that kind of activity.
Mr. Pitt, am I correct that the suspension or, of course, suspends trading in the stock by anyone, whether involved in manipulation or not? Now, if you had to go into court, you would proceed against the manipulators. You might get an injunction against manipulation. But could you in court get an injunction against trading by everyone?
No, we could not.
So really, this is a broader remedy in its coverage than the remedy you can get in court with notice and hearing and all the rest, isn't it?
This is a broader remedy, and it is solely a stopgap remedy until we can stop the market forces that are disrupting an orderly marketplace.
Stopgap.
That is correct.
May I ask one other question? Is Mr. Sloan correct in saying the first suspension, I believe, was on April 29th, and the first memorandum in the commission files explaining the reasons for the suspension or recommending it is May 2nd? Is that correct?
That is the first memorandum that's in the record, and I cannot be sure whether there was an earlier memorandum, but what often happens in response to that question is that the staff will come up on an emergency basis orally and advise the commission that it has learned of certain facts and tell the commission they, as in this case, had talked to Royal Canadian Mounted Police authorities, that they suspected a manipulation and that there was a possible criminal indictment in Canada, and the commission would, on the basis of that oral presentation, enter a suspension order. Under the Sunshine Act, as it's now in effect, those discussions would be recorded and there would be a tape recording to verify it. That act was not in effect at the time that that this occurred.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.